That's So Hindu, the podcast brought to you by the Hindu American Foundation. I'm Matt McDermott. In this episode, we're speaking with Sean Binda, the man behind the YouTube channel Hindu Lifestyle. We discuss his take on the opening of the Ram Mandir in Ayodhya, his inspiration for starting his YouTube channel, and a number of other issues from his perspective growing up as a member of the Indo-Caribbean community in Canada. Hope you enjoy it.
Okay, Sean, thanks so much for joining us. For Hindu Lifestyle, your YouTube channel, you've been doing it since 2017. What was the inspiration for starting it?
So I decided to start a YouTube channel based off the feedback that I had received from a group of students that I was teaching at our local mandir. I started volunteering to teach our Bal Vikas classes back in about 2012, 2013. And it was a need that the mandir had at the time. We were lacking teachers. And I said, you know what, let me try my hand at it. I was already involved in a lot of sort of the advocacy side. And I said, you know what, I'm already doing research on certain things. Let me start to see if I can translate that into educating younger Hindus. So the Bal Vikas classes that we hosted at my local mandir were split into three age groups. And I was in charge of sort of the starting of high school. So from about 13 years of age all the way up to university. And I had started teaching those classes by asking questions to those Hindu youth. You know, like, what do we mean by God? Do Hindus believe in God? And in very basic things. And that morphed into me continuing these classes for up until the present time. And I remember quite clearly after about 2 years, the students that started with me that were about 14 years old, they were coming close to finishing up their high school. And they said, Sean, you should do something with all of these lessons. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I should do something. And they said, you know, maybe you could do a website and kind of post your stuff. And I can't remember who exactly mentioned, well, they basically said, maybe you should like do video recording or a YouTube. And I sort of stopped and I didn't say anything to them at the time. I just went home and I spoke to my wife about it. And I said, you know what, I think I need to do something different. So that's when I decided to start posting videos on YouTube based on my experience as a Hindu growing up here in North America. And the lessons that I used sort of formed the basis of my earlier videos. I was aiming to do about two videos a month when I started, and I maintained that up until the birth of my first son, and that happened in 2018. And then I needed to take a break because life certainly took over. And then I rebooted the channel late last year in October of 2023.
What do you see as the main challenges or issues young Hindus are facing?
I would say the issues faced by Hindus growing outside of India are probably quite similar, regardless of your geographic location. And I think where the similarities lie is growing up in a Western environment. And by Western environment, I mean growing up in an area where the general sort of environment is a Judeo-Christian type environment. And I remember to myself that the biggest problem that I found growing up was, you know, trying to relate the practices that we were taught, that we saw going to the mandir, to and make it more relevant and real in my own life. And I don't fault people of my parents' generation when they came up and they migrated here to kind of build the mandir community, and the Hindu community wasn't easy. But we were dealing with a generation that was new to the city of Toronto, and they were dealing with, you know, everything about being a minority. But then you have people like myself that were born in the 80s and grew up in the 90s, and trying to like figure out that, you know, we're first generation North Americans, whether you be in the USA or Canada. And making those practices that we saw going to the temple, that we were taught in our classes and all those things, making that relevant to our lives. And when I started teaching, that's when I realized that I had the opportunity to kind of be that missing link that I didn't have growing up. And I think that's where I found my role to fit in. And And you asked me about, you know, some of the things that are different to us growing up. And this is something that I'd mentioned in one of my talks that I gave at a local sort of workshop that we had here, is that when you leave your door in your home, you're walking into an environment that isn't externally Hindu. For someone growing up, whether it be in the Caribbean or in India, generally when you walk out, you're surrounded by what I would say a dharmic culture, a Hindu culture. But here, you're not surrounded by that. So the question is, how do you create that environment? And even if you create that environment, does that have any relevance to your life? And I think the purpose of the channel was trying to bridge that gap that I saw between the practices of being Hindu to the relevance of living our life here as a, what I would say, a Western Hindu.
One thing that we see here in the US, and I want to ask you this specifically from the Canadian perspective, because we have our own in the United States, is that the Sikh community in Canada is quite large. And we've seen in the United States, and I know you've seen it too, a rise in agitation for Khalistan. That is a separate Sikh state that activists want to carve out of India, but historically was part of Pakistan as well. What's your experience been with that? And how is the Hindu community in Canada around you reacting to that, responding to that?
Yeah, I can speak to that from sort of two perspectives. One is about my sort of growing up here. I never experienced any issues with any of the Sikhs that I knew growing up. When I was in my teenage years, my tabla teacher was a Sikh, and he taught me everything that I knew about music, and he invited me to a lot of the functions that was hosted. So my personal experience growing up, I never experienced a lot of the issues that we see are arising now. What I have noticed, and you're quite right to mention, is that with the presence of social media, that has amplified that message quite a bit. I know a lot of the Mandirs here in the Greater Toronto Area have faced a lot of those protests that are happening. It's posted all over Twitter. And it is rather unfortunate to see this happening, because even within my own community here, we see so many times our Sikh brothers and sisters coming to the Mandir and joining us in worship, that I really wonder where a lot of this stuff is coming from. And you could go online and then you can research all of the external forces that are causing these issues to arise. I would say that the government has a role to play in this. You know, our prime minister certainly could have taken a different route in trying to address these issues up front and not let it just continue to ride and try to use the community to help gain votes for his party. And what we are seeing now is a rise in a lot of Hindu phobia that is tied, and the Khalistani movement are trying to align with those forces to drive a wedge in the Hindu community. But personally speaking, I haven't experienced any of those issues, and I hope that it never does arise for me. I do feel that this is something that the government does have to tackle, and they have to do it soon.
One of the first videos I noticed when you came back to this reboot of the channel was earlier this year when it was right before, in fact, the new Ram Mandir in Ayodhya was consecrated. Can you explain to listeners, I think you rightly say that it was a big moment for Hindus of all lineages, an important moment. But you went into in the video the importance specifically for the Indo-Caribbean community of Lord Ram and why this means so much for listeners that may not know that facet of Hinduism. Can you go into that a little bit, please?
Certainly. So just to backtrack a bit, the Ram Mandir inauguration was something that was on my mind when I rebooted my YouTube channel. And I knew it was coming up. And the one thing that I had noticed within our own community here is that not many people of the Indo-Caribbean background were speaking about it. So I remember in late December, early January, I was speaking to my wife and I said, this event is coming up. I feel that I need to make a video on it. And I went into the reasons why. And I said, this is a big moment for Hindus worldwide. And I said, even for ourselves growing up, like for myself personally, I remember as a young boy going to the mandir and attending various satsangs. And what we would always hear was the chanting of the Ramayana. And I think that was the driving factor of what sort of prompted me to create the video. And I did speak to the Indo-Caribbean experience when it comes to the singing of the Ramayana. Before my dad passed, I remember him telling me stories of how, you know, when his brothers and his uncles and everyone would gather together and sing various chaupais and the dohas in the Ramayana, like these were things that created memories for himself. And when his sort of age bracket came here in the city of Toronto, we used to go monthly and satsangs used to be held monthly at house to house to house. And I was probably 3, 4, 5 years old going to these things with my parents, bringing us along, and we would fall asleep in the evening time. And you would just hear this, the chanting and the singing of the Ramayana. And as I mentioned in my video, in 1989, around that time, my nanny and my nana, my maternal grandparents, they hosted our Ramayana Yagna in Trinidad. And for myself, like growing up here in Canada, that was not something that I had participated in before. So my mom took my brother and my sister and myself, and we all went down. And that was really a moment that I still remember up until now. And the one thing that I remember hearing was that this was something that was done quite regularly. And the, you know, these would be a 7-night Ramayana Yagna where a pundit would come, whether it be the guru of the family, and they would come and they would sing the Ramayana for 7 straight nights, and the entire village would come out. They would provide food. There would be music. And for my siblings and myself, this certainly was an experience that has been embedded in our memory. And fast forward to this time now, and with the inauguration of the Ram Mandir, I personally felt that our Indo-Caribbean community here in the Greater Toronto Area wasn't really connecting the dots. And I actually spoke to various members of our Mandir, and they themselves said that prior to me like creating that video, they didn't really understand the significance of the impact. Is that for a lot of them, they felt that the Ram Mandir inauguration was, you know, for something for Hindus that are in India with no relevance to people like ourselves. And the creation of the video, you know, it did garner a lot of views on YouTube, which I certainly wasn't expecting. But if you go through the comments of that experience was reflected quite like throughout the world. And so that just goes to show you that the Ramayana, Sri Ram, and that event meant something for Hindus, regardless of whether, you know, you had an Indian citizenship. And for ourselves of the Indo-Caribbean community, it was the Ramayana that got us through those hard times. And if you read through any scholarship, they constantly bring this up, is that, you know, going through hard times, who do you turn to? What do you turn to? And even pundits now, like of that are a little bit older in their 70s, would always go back to that in your times of need, this is who you turn to. And I think that was the driving force in creating that video, is that I knew all of these stories, I heard all of these stories, but how to make it relevant to the people that are now living here in the Toronto area, in North America, and even more importantly, the next generation that is being brought up here. The current kids in my Balvikas class now, you know, there are, you know, you're Gen Z now, and they themselves didn't realize it. And like a lot of them were like, Sean, you know, we just saw your video. And like, and a lot of them, what surprised me is that leading up to that day and even that same day, they were up, you know, for us, it was maybe 2, 3 a.m. in the morning. And then on their own social media, they're posting photos of what the event meant to them. So that just goes to show me that that everything that anyone can do to make these practices relevant to our lives goes a long way. Even if it's just planting that one seed, that is what needs to be done. And if I can play some small part in that, then I would say that the channel itself is a success.
Do you ever encounter in the people you interact with in your local community, this is something that we certainly see at HAF, people that may acknowledge that this is a big moment for the global Hindu community, but they focus upon the early 90s when Babri Masjid was torn down by a mob. And they seem to focus upon that and as a stain upon the whole thing. Is that something that you encounter, and how do you respond to that?
That is something that I did encounter, and it was on social media primarily, which is where some of these interactions happen. So on Instagram, there was a post that was made commemorating this event from one of the local Indo-Caribbean associations. So I just commented on it saying, great, you know, it's great to see that that this event is being commemorated by your organization. And that just started off a chain reaction of people commenting exactly what you said. I also received a few messages personally from people that wanted to get my opinion of, oh, this mandir was built on, you know, on the remains of a destroyed mosque, of a masjid, you know, how is it that Hindus can do things like this? And, you know, this is a big problem within our Hindu community, is that we have, you know, over the years, and I would say that I've been lucky that I've spent the, you know, the later part of my 20s and the early part of my 30s, you know, having the opportunity to kind of read up on a lot of this stuff, that, you know, we have gone through such a period of where the knowledge of our own history has been lost, that now it's a reawakening, and trying to challenge that is tough. It's tough. I know members of the Hindu American Foundation posted quite extensively about this, about the history and the court cases, but it is such an uphill battle. And the way that I try to approach it is that I always go into it saying that I can't change anyone's mind, because I think people go into these arguments with a preconceived notion. And if you try to think that you're going to change someone's mind by typing a few comments on an Instagram page or something along those lines, it's probably not going to happen. The best way to tackle these issues is to have direct conversations with individuals, which unfortunately, it, you know, social media has its pluses and its minuses. The one of the negatives of social media is that lack of the one-to-one conversations. And it's unfortunate that the same people that were commenting, you know, us, I do know some of them, but they wouldn't bring this up in a one-to-one conversation, unfortunately. But the best way to challenge this is through education. That is the only way. And go into it with an open mind, and go into it with the attitude that you're not going to change anyone's opinion. Because if you try to force an opinion on someone that's not ready to receive it, you're not going to get very far, and it's going to lead to an exercise in frustration and wanting to just stop everything.
I have a question about media representation, but before we get to that, it just occurred to me, and I didn't set these two questions up that way, but there's a through line, of course, between Ayodhya, Babri Masjid, and the question about Khalistan and Sikhs, because if you go back into the history of it, some of the first people that were agitating to have worship of Lord Ram reestablished were in fact Sikhs, yeah, back in the 19th century. That may seem incongruous to listeners today without the history of it, but it's an important historical fact. So, but bringing it back to the present, what I really like the fact that you said you can't really convince people, which is a sad thing to say for somebody like me whose job is communications, that you actually can't convince people of things often, because people do come into it with preconceived notions. And it seems to me, in looking at the coverage of it, that if somebody that's outside the Hindu community just starts reading articles about this, and it made headlines for a couple of days back in January, more than a couple of days, you know, a week ahead, a couple of weeks afterwards, all of the media coverage outside of India was negative about this. And the history, to bring it back to the who's the history of the site and the archaeology of the site, all the history just talks about like Babri Masjid, like sprouted up like a mushroom. Like it was always there, mm-hmm. but it doesn't go. No one talks about the archaeology. Is there anything that maybe you don't have any other advice or on this, but how do you think it's, we can bring that up? Is it one-to-one conversations about it? You know, to these people, these ideologues who are dead set that, you know, it was a bunch of fanatical Hindus that tore down a mosque that was there. And they don't seem to go past that into the history, that archaeology shows there was Dharmic worship on that site going back 2,000 years.
So that's a very interesting question. I would say the first challenge that needs to be addressed is for our own members of the community to actually know that history. Because if you yourself don't know it, then you have nothing to say when people come to you with this. And that was my experience, is that many people, after I created that video, many people, and just locally here is, after I did the video, I was asked to present it at my Mundir, at our seniors group, and all of these things. Many of them didn't know the history. And so I would say first tackle that part, is get everyone to understand, you know, the history of it. And it, the, what I've seen happen after that is you need to have conversations, but not in the way where you're trying to like force an opinion, because these things sometimes come up in just casual conversations. And I have noticed this in my own work environment where things just come up and not necessarily about the Ram Mandir, but it could be anything that may be conceived as a sensitive topic. Is sometimes these things come up and you have to be able to know how to give an opinion that is not trying to change anyone's mind on it, but to just plant the seed of whether it be, you know, maybe you should rethink what you're saying right now, and then leave it at that. Because once you do that, then that person, whoever it is, will then go back to it and be like, hey, you know, I was talking to Sean and he had mentioned that this Ram Mandir, you know, there's a lot more information than what we're reading from the media. That could then prompt someone to actually go and try to find out more about it. What I also think is helpful is for ourselves, meaning anyone of the Hindu persuasion, the work that the Hindu American Foundation is doing, is to actually just continuously put stuff out through any medium that's available to us right now. I am not the only one doing this sort of work, whether it be on YouTube or you're on Twitter or you're hosting your own sort of WhatsApp groups or sessions or classes, but this is the need of the hour. I think education of our own community has to be first and foremost, because one thing that I've gotten into the habit of saying is that whenever you attend a Hindu function, you're always telling the same people that kind of know what your message is.
That's true.
How is it that you reach the people that are not part of your circle? And that was also one of the goals of my YouTube channel, is that how do you broaden that reach? And I've been lucky that I've received feedback from many people that are not in this, what I would call the inner circle of Hinduism or in your local Hindu group, that reached out to me saying, Sean, you know, I was more of an atheist, blah, 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 blah. But after watching some of your videos, it made me rethink a lot of my positions. And I think that's who we need to be targeting right now, is don't try to change the opinion of someone who is an anti-Hindu or a Hindu folk. But how do you, you know, I heard this said by many people, is that how do you get and how do you reach the Hindus that may not be as aware as you? And once you get that mass, then I think we're starting to actually, we're at the beginning of a big movement. And I think we're there. I think we're getting there. We're not quite there yet, but we're almost there.
Yeah. I think there's some definite wisdom in that there is a segment of the anti-Hindu brigade that the community gets very worked up at. people get very worked up by her and people, other community organizations that say anti-Hindu things. And I do too. I've been called out on stage at events. I've had many negative public interactions and online interactions, face-to-face interactions. But I always try to remember that that's not actually my target audience. I don't have to convince them. You know, I have to convince the people that haven't heard, you know, or are influenceable. When people like that, that are so set in their ways, in anti-Hindu ways, they're not influenceable. So I only have so much time, so I can't concentrate on that. To go on to another topic, we have a few minutes if we can do this in a succinct manner. An issue of education, and it is your latest video, and I found it fascinating, is the connections between Rastafarianism, the religion, you know, originating in Jamaica, and Hinduism. For people that don't know, what's the nutshell of that historically?
So the historical basis of that is actually quite interesting in comparison to the Indo-Caribbean experience of Hindus in Guyana and Trinidad. So after the end of the slavery, the British colonies needed workers. So India was where they set a lot of their, is where they set their eyes on. And Indians, the majority being Hindu, about 80% Hindu, were brought to the Caribbean. And they were brought in as workers. Now, the majority, of course, went to Guyana and Trinidad. But there was also Indians that went to a lot of the other islands in the Caribbean, and Jamaica was one of them. Personally, myself growing up, I did not know this. And it was a shock to me as a kid growing up when I and in the video that I made was when I found out about this reggae artist called Supercat. And that's when I realized, wait a minute, there's Indians in Jamaica. So what ended up happening is that about 37,000 Indians went to Jamaica in between, 1845 to 1937. So in that time period, only 37,000 Indians. And their experience differs quite a bit from the experience of Indians in Trinidad and Guyana, in that the British did not see them as a threat in terms of trying to pit the Africans against the Indians. The Indians were allowed to integrate more into Jamaican society. And because of that interaction, in my research for doing that video, I came across numerous journal articles talking about the influence of Hinduism on the birth of Rastafari. The key being an influence. And I think, you know, there are so many things that we ourselves as Hindus in the Caribbean know to ourselves, but can't accurately describe it. But like you look at the lifestyle and you look at so many things that we know is of a Hindu origin, and you see it in the Rastafari. And it wasn't until that I stumbled upon a few articles that I decided to actually make a video about it. So what ended up happening is that the Indians and the Africans mixed, and they mixed where this never happened to the Indians and the Africans in the other Caribbean islands. And that mixing led to what in one of the journal articles that I read called, you know, a type of cultural borrowing, where, you know, there was just, you know, co-mingling of different traditions. And so one of the early things that came up was that the performance of Kali Puja. And this was a ritual that still goes right now, that is still ongoing in Trinidad and Guyana. And it was a practice that was brought to Jamaica as well. And the whole ritual of that puja, where the smoking of marijuana or ganja, as it's called in Sanskrit, you know, these were all things that seeped into and became part of Rastafari culture. I spoke about I and that connection to the Atman and Brahman. And while So that was new to me. That was one thing when I was doing my research, I actually did not realize that. And I was reading this and I'm like, this makes perfect sense of why the Rastafari movement is very different than what you would see from your standard sort of reading of the Christian Bible. The smoking of marijuana, of course, came as the indentured laborers brought the seeds of the marijuana plant with them as well. And what I found fascinating about this whole thing was that, you know, the historical basis of bringing Indians led to a lot of racial tensions that I actually don't know has gone away in the island, you know, in Trinidad and Guyana, because voting is still done along racial lines. But you go to Jamaica and that tension is generally not there. And I do know some Hindus from Jamaica right now, and it's quite interesting to see. And it was an interesting aspect of our own Indo-Caribbean identity that actually doesn't get acknowledged. And that was the purpose for making the video that I made. And of course, one of the things that comes up now is that, well, you know, am I saying that Hinduism is what brought about the Rastafari movement? And no, that's not what I'm saying. Is that there was a mingling of different cultures that led to the birth of the Rastafari, and is the acknowledgement. And I think what I wanted to get the point that I was trying to make in the video is that Hinduism has a lot to offer. And it was those points that the Rastafari saw. And even now, like growing up here in the West, like we know what Hinduism brings to the table. And I think that was something that happened back then as well.
So what topics do you plan on taking next? We're running up on about 35 minutes here.
Yeah.
What's next for the channel? And when you're done, give us a plug. Where can people find you?
Sure. So next up, I want to be doing a series on sort of relationships in Hinduism, dating, marriage. I have some topics planned on tracing back our ancestry. I have a friend of mine who did an entire family tree where he of course was born here in Canada, but he started doing a family tree, and it's such an interesting history about how he is able to trace back his roots. I want to do a whole series on just what it means to be a Hindu, to sort of make that like a series on its own. Of course, time is the one thing that is short. You know, I do have family commitments. YouTube is not a full-time job for myself, but I certainly hope to be putting out at least one video a month. And so that's where I sort of see the short term. Long term, I hope to eventually be able to post maybe one or two videos, probably about two videos a month if I can, you know, get some help on the editing side. For anyone that is interested in my work, you can find me at hindulifestyle.ca. That URL takes you straight to my YouTube channel. And if you're on YouTube, you can find me at just search for Hindu Lifestyle. I am on Instagram and Facebook as well, but not as big as YouTube. You can find me on Twitter. My handle is Sean Binda. And on Instagram, it's a Hindu Lifestyle Official, and you can find me there.
Well, that's it for this episode of That's So Hindu. If you enjoyed it, please take a minute and leave us a nice 5-star review. It's how you can help the show get discovered by more listeners. You can help ensure that more of these get made by making a donation to HAF at HinduAmerican.org/donate. Thanks again for listening.